unbroken. By and by, Lord, by and by, there is a better home awaiting in the sky. Lord, in the sky, will I follow close behind her? Thought I would hold up and be brave, and I could not hide my sorrow when they laid her in the grave. In the circle, seats were emptied by one, they went away. Now my family, they are parted. When we see each other someday in a circle, be unbroken, by and by, Lord, by and by, there is a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky, in the sky, Lord. In the sky, Lord, in the sky.
and good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program of science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, Ellen Datlow, who hasn't been at WBAI in a while, and then it was 8 miles away from here. Well, downtown or uptown, it's good to have her here. Stay tuned. Alrighty, so let's see. A new segment on Hour of the Wolf. There will come a time whether Hour of the Wolf gets back to, its old time slot, or gets increased time in its current slot, or goes to additional programming via pod, only maybe off the WBAI website, maybe off of OurWolf.org, which was built for me but never used by Chris Dykeman and Matt Kressel, or what. But there is this idea in my head, and has been for a while, that there will be an Hour of the Wolf 2.0. And what this means are different people doing segments, turning Hour of the Wolf into a magazine. Now, that doesn't mean I'm giving up nothing. If anything, I will take even half an hour more. Maybe I'll do half an hour of music, then 90 minutes of interviews with editors, writers, and stuff like that. But astute listeners will have noticed that for about a year and a half, Genevieve Valentine has come here and been doing reviews of indie films. I'm not on the invitation lists for the big, you know, for Oblivion or Iron Man 8 or any of these things. But for some reason, I am very grateful to be on the invite list for indie films. And I've been sending these to Genevieve Valentine, who does this wonderful movie blog on her website at GenevieveValentine.com. And she's done, about five or six reviews for us, and they've been wonderful. Right now, she's on hiatus by her own choice. Hopefully, she will come back. But we will have other segments that we will have. It's basically all things geek. We're going to do tech stuff, like, you know, the latest phone. You want to talk about the latest phone? Only one person in the world who's going to, and that's Tempest Bradford, because she's going to do reviews, not like, we took a look at this and decided. She'll say things like, this phone sucks. You know, she's just like between the eyes, whatever. So she's going to be our tech person. And then Aliyah Dawn Johnson is going to do things on young adult fiction and stuff like that. So that's Hour of the Wolf 2.0. Don't ask me when. But this is formulating in my head, and at some point I will make it a reality. But we have a new segment, and that is that, yes, there is a person capable of reviewing Iron Man 8 and all these big films, and that's Dan Persons. Dan Persons was, I think he was the editor, or at least an editor, at Ciné Fantastique magazine, which was one of my favorite magazines that covered genre film, because it really got into what is genre film. It really wasn't just, gosh, wow, boy, oh boy, and it understood cinema. And Dan has been doing reviews on his own podcast for a while, and I told him that he can take what a call, the big boy beat, as it were, as opposed to the indie film beat, the what they call the tentpole movies, movies that studios keep their tents upright with. And, of course, we have had one such film this past week. And so this is Dan's very first review for us. And, well, here it is.
Round towards the end of Oblivion, the new science fiction action film starring Tom Cruise, the references to 2001 A Space Odyssey become blatant. It's there in the layout of a space shuttle cabin, in the way one part of the ship rotates while another remains stationary, and in the confrontation between a human and a large elemental form, although in this case it's a pyramid, as was originally planned for 2001. This doesn't bother me. I don't particularly believe that Joseph Kosinski, who's directing this adaptation of his own unpublished graphic novel, is trying to compare himself to 2001 director Stanley Kubrick or his movie to what is arguably the greatest science fiction film ever made. I'm taking it as homage, and in which case, why not homage the best? But it does cause a problem. Stanley Kubrick was a great visual stylist, as is Kosinski, as is evidenced by Oblivion's fantastic, beautifully realized world. But Kubrick was more than look, ideas attached to the stories he was telling, frequently challenging ideas. Oblivion makes feints in that direction, but it's clear it's just artifice, a way to wrap Kosinski's impressive visuals and well-staged action in a thin veneer of profundity. The story is that Earth has won a war against alien invaders, but only at the cost of irreparably poisoning the planet. The survivors have moved to a moon orbiting Jupiter, another 2001 reference, and Tom Cruise and Andrea Riseborough play Jack and Victoria, caretakers left on Earth to tend after the armed drones that patrol the planet and take out any alien scavengers. If it was as simple as that, we'd have an interesting character piece, and that'd be fine by me, but that wouldn't suit a big-budget Tom Cruise starring studio release. And so, there are a series of revelations that range from seen it before to oh come on. A spaceship crash lands and its sole survivor, played by Olga Kurylenko, looks a lot like someone conjured from the dim reaches of Jack's memory, and it is eventually revealed that those alien scavengers might not be the enemies they seem. How much not the enemies they seem? I'll give you two hints. One, Morgan. To Freeman. Oblivion is pretty much an agglomeration of post-apocalyptic science fiction tropes. We've seen them before. What few surprises there are tend to be more silly than stunning. Still, this is state-of-the-art studio storytelling, really good looking, and yes, fun if you don't ask too much of it. You get your money's worth, just don't expect it to resonate after you've left the theater. I'm Dan Persons. Come listen in as I talk with the makers and stars of classic genre film and TV on the CFQ Interview Podcast, available every week at cfqonline.com.
Okay, and again, that was spelled CFQ, like Ciné Fantastique. I assume that's where he got that from, but I thought that was a good inaugural review. He did another one for me like 2 weeks ago, and Evil Dead, the remake of Evil Dead, and I'm probably wrong about this, but I said no, and this is really going to get me into trouble considering this morning's guest, because Hour of the Wolf will cover horror, but I am not a horror fan.
Boo hiss.
Exactly. And Ellen Datlow is probably, arguably, one of the world experts on horror. You probably read more of it.
Contemporary horror short stories, maybe.
Yeah. And I've just started getting involved in it through podcasting Nightmare Magazine. Mm-hmm. And actually, I've liked all the stuff that I've gotten through there so far. But there's a difference to me between horror fiction, what you put into the best of the year's horror that comes out annually from...
Well, up until now, Nightshade, but I'm not sure what's going to happen next.
Oh, God, the whole Nightshade debacle, right. But somebody's going to pick
yes,
it up.
Nightshade, well, yes, it'll happen.
Yeah, it'll happen. And listeners, you want to find out more, go online and find
just
out.
Just listen to the whispers.
Yes, exactly. Listen to the yeah, there's lots of whispers online about the politics of science fiction, fantasy, and horror. And the Wikipedia thing, is that all fiction?
That's all fiction.
Yeah, it's all fiction, yeah. They've decided, well, we'll get into that later. Anyway.
But just to tell you, I'm not a big fan of horror movies.
Well,
most
see,
of them. I only like very few. I hardly ever go to see them.
Yeah, and that's the distinction, is that if it's a real horror movie, what you...
Well, it depends what you mean by real horror movie. There are a lot of real horror movies, but they're not ones that I'm interested in.
Well, for me, a real horror movie is one that will, using your definition, elicit horror, but is not a splatter film. I am not... I don't believe, unlike Max Schmid in The Next Room... you know, Max's idea of a great movie is My Bloody Valentine 7 in 4D.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's on a 4K screen and you feel like the severed head is actually dripping
been there, done
in
that.
Your lap.
Andy Warhol's Frankenstein, Andy Warhol's Dracula. Like,
yeah,
no,
although
I don't...
even those, which were really
cool. No, I'm just saying though, those are 3D and they did have limbs thrown at your faces.
Yeah, but they looked like the mannequins they were.
Well, yeah, they were cheesy.
Yeah, they were cheesy, whereas, you know, nowadays the idea is to try to... And I hear from people, oh, boy, it really looks like that stiletto went into the eye and you could see the iris come out separately. This is not, to me, entertainment. I got, as a kid, maybe this is the reason, I got scared to pieces by the trailer for the movie Whatever Happened to Baby Jane,
mm-hmm.
with Betty Davis
yes,
and Sean
Crawford.
Yes,
I saw the movie.
Now, do you remember the trailer?
No.
The trailer is probably a lot scarier than the movie because it was just this picture of this broken doll
mm-hmm.
with the head cracked open.
I remember that was like a poster. Wasn't that the poster for it?
It was the poster, but the trailer was that doll coming at you on the screen over and over, and I'm 9 years old.
I don't remember that at
I remember it vividly. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that I was at my local...
But see, that's good horror, though.
Well, it was effective because I still don't sleep as a result of that trailer. Because I was there to see McHale's Navy meets the Air Force, you know, because Ernest Borgnine and Tin Conway were actually coming to the theater. And I got subjected...
Well, now they try to match the trailers to the genre of movie watching.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they're doing that. That was so inappropriate,
yeah.
That particular matinee that I went to. But it's... And, you know, I could sort of take... You know, now I can appreciate Roger Corman. I couldn't when I was a kid. You know, the Poe...
I only saw a few of those.
Yeah.
I think I saw The House of Usher, which I think was his, but I'm not sure.
It is. Yeah. And you know, they're fun because they're cheesy, because they're Roger Corman. They, of course, have nothing to do with Poe. My favorite one today is The Raven, with Boris Karloff and Vincent Price and Jack Nicholson.
Right.
And it's a comedy. It's just, it's got nothing to do with anything. It's just...
Roger Corman was a guest at ICFA several years ago, and he was charming.
ICFA is the International...
Conference of the Fantastic and the Arts.
Yeah, in Florida?
Yeah.
He is responsible for making so many great... I rewatched this movie, Battle Beyond the Stars, which is a POS, a piece of scrap. And George Peppard, Robert Vaughn.
I loved you. Richard... I used to have such a crush on George Peppard.
Yeah, you'll love this movie. You'll love this movie. It is so cheesy. It is so bad. At least one or two Playboy models, even though there's no nudity in it, but just had to have. And it's The Magnificent Seven in space. Mm-hmm. And it is a screenplay by John Sayles.
Oh, wow.
People who worked on it included Stan Winston, Francis Ford Coppola, somebody named Lucas, last name, not first. I mean, that's how these people graduated film school.
Right, yeah.
Is basically they studied under Roger Corman.
I know.
They got their,
yeah.
And he's supposed to be this uber charming kind of guy. Anyway. I'm not into visceral horror. I'm not into, and that includes short stories, where the grossest short story was at one of your readings. Ellen, like our guest last week, Matt Kressel, is curator, producer, whatever you guys call it. I call it curator.
We call it hosting.
Yeah. See, I don't, because sometimes I'll book guests, and then I'll have a host.
Oh, but see, we always... We do,
but you're always
We book it and we host.
You book and host, yeah. So you're the hosts and presenters and producers of the KGB Fantastic Fiction series at Third Wednesdays
every month,
85 East 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Blah 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 blah. Go to fantasticfiction.org
maybe. I don't even know.
Org.
So wait a minute. So what visceral horror was it? Who is the person? Who is the real
Charles Platt?
Charles Platt.
Maybe it was in Yursif.
I don't think Charles Platt ever read a KGB.
then it was in Yursif reading.
Uh-huh.
It was, oh, my God. I mean...
What did he read?
Oh, God. It was, you know, it was funny. I was telling a gentleman by the name of Josh Jasper, and I was saying, the worst story I ever remember was one written by Charles Platt. And he immediately named the story. He knew what it was. It had to do with somebody who had a gas pump inserted in their anus. And I won't...
Okay.
That's bad enough.
Okay.
It gets worse.
Oh, there are much worse stories than that. I mean, Chuck Palahniuk has written, you know, his stories, Guts, and he has amazingly disgusting stories, but they're still really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah. I mean, I guess I could like those, but I've been.
Well, you might not. I mean, I published them at in the year's Best Fantasy and Horror.
Well,
another one by him. Hot Potting.
I don't. But that's the funny thing is that I think I don't like horror, but I have never really had a problem with your anthologies that are the best of the year horror.
Have you read all the stories in them?
Most.
Okay.
Not all.
Mm-hmm.
As with any best of the year book.
I mean,
there's
a real variety. I mean, I have a real variety, and it's everything from quiet horror to visceral horror. I mean, to me, if it's something to be visceral, it has to go with the rest of the story. So, I mean, the point shouldn't be the viscera.
Yeah.
That should be part of the telling.
Well, you see, that's what I object to in movies, because
same here.
99% of the movies that come out that are labeled horror movies are visceral splatter films.
It's slice and dice.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not ghost stories, although there was that recent one with Daniel Radcliffe, The Woman in Black. Yeah, which I didn't see, but Barbara did. And so it was a good ghost story.
It was okay. I mean, the thing is, I have a hard time being surprised by ghost stories.
Well,
and I know, I mean, the thing is also, you can't, if a story is just, if you can't read a story just for the surprise, because there's got to be more to it. With the movie, I wanted to like it better than I did. I liked it, and I thought he was really good in it, but it...
Yeah, it was more of a showcase for who is
Daniel. And, I mean, and also, don't forget, a lot of ghost stories aren't horror stories anyway. A good chunk of them are not horror stories.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, and Gordon Lisner is going to be doing some ghosty type stuff.
I'm going on a ghost tour with him.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, Chris Dykman and I are going.
Oh, very cool. You're going as...
No, as customers.
As customers, yeah. Oh, maybe I should go on that
this Saturday.
Well. This Saturday?
Saturday evening.
Okay, if somebody wants
7:30.
And if somebody wanted to go, how would they find out about it?
I'm not... I don't know the URL. I mean,
you know what, folks?
Contact Jim and we'll find out what the URL is for you. That's
exactly right.
I don't know what the name, I don't know what company he works for.
But send me an email, jim@ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF.com, and I will get the information and forward it to anybody.
Yeah, he doesn't do it every Saturday, but this coming Saturday he has one at 7:30.
You know what?
It's the West Village. It's going to be a tour of the West Village.
Very cool.
A ghost tour.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It really does. I know he does these every so often, but I actually thought that he did it more during the
Halloween
fall ghostly season than the earlier ghostly season.
Right, but anyway, back to ghost stories.
Back to horror.
Well, yeah, I mean, really? Some ghost stories are horror. I deliberately, with my anthology, The Dark, deliberately tried to acquire new ghost stories that were creepy and not moving. I mean, there are many moving ghost stories, where it's just a moving situation and emotionally jarring, and emotionally wrenching. But not necessarily horrific or dark.
Yeah.
And I kind of deliberately wanted to counteract that with my anthology.
Yeah.
So I tried. I mean, there are stories in there that are moving, but the idea was actually to make them creepy, to get creepy ghost stories.
Yeah, yeah. Uncreepy ghost stories. One of my favorites is John Collier's story called Are You Too Late or Was I Too Early?
Oh, I don't know that, but it sounds lovely. Oh. The title's great.
Oh, I'm not going to waste our airtime, but remind me on the drive home.
Right, okay.
Going downtown to tell you the précis, because it is it is just a lovely piece. And even when you know the spoiler, I have a new word, by the way.
What?
Reveal. The reveal, yes. When I was speaking...
Well, that's not a new word.
For me. It's a new word for me.
Okay.
Is that when I did an interview with Michael Bishop, which was a thrill, I interviewed him last summer on the phone, one of my rare phone interviews. And we were talking about his baseball novel. There is something that is revealed about a third of the way into the book, and it really just totally changes the outlook. And
also, possibly the MacGuffin.
Except that the MacGuffin, in the Hitchcock sense, doesn't matter, because MacGuffin can be a briefcase that can be replaced by a garbage can. The MacGuffin is anything you're going after.
To me, the MacGuffin, it feels like. The subject of...
That's not how Truffaut and Hitchcock, who I think coined it, used it. They used it as whatever the thing is that everybody's going after, and what that is may not even matter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, I know there are people that also use it as the reveal.
The reveal, exactly.
Yeah, but actually in movie scripts they call it, camera pulls back and reveals... the dead mother or something like that. The reveal is she's a guy. It's not that's not a spoiler. It doesn't.
It is a spoiler.
Well, it is. You see, that's the thing. It is in she's a guy. That's a spoiler in that particular movie.
Mm-hmm.
But why I liked the elegant way in which Michael Bishop said, there is something that I reveal about a third of the way through the book, and I would not like to spoil, I would not like to ruin that reveal.
Mm-hmm. So then that is a spoiler also. I mean, it is a spoiler.
It is, but the book holds up without it.
Of course. Well, the best material does.
That's the thing.
I've published stories that exactly what's going to happen at the end, but it's how you get there. I mean, the end is inevitable, especially in horror. I mean, not always, but sometimes.
Yeah, otherwise it wouldn't be horror.
And it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because it's the getting there that is so horrific.
Yeah.
And even though you know it, and possibly at the end, it's even more horrific because you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah. The one case in which I didn't like... Danny Boyle made a really top-notch science fiction film called Sunshine.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet, so don't tell me anything. Nope, don't. I haven't. Someday I'll see it.
I loved the first 80% of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say anymore.
Okay.
That's it. And it's because of the last 20% that I don't love it.
Right.
It was in the category of, as Dan Persons was talking about, Kubrick and Andrei Tarkovsky, you know, with movies like Solaris.
I know what he's done. I haven't seen them.
Oh.
Did he do the one about the train towards the end of his career? With Rebecca De Mornay and Runaway Train. He did not do that?
He did not do that.
Who did that?
I am not sure.
Someone like that did.
Trans-Siberian. Is that the one you're thinking of?
No, I don't think
that's
so.
That's not a Runaway Train. At any rate...
I think he actually did.
I think Tarkovsky only ever directed movies in Russian.
All right.
And never spoke English.
Okay. Well, I wonder who that was. It was someone like that.
His main actors were the same actors as Ingmar Bergman, Erland Josephson.
Mm-hmm.
And folks like that. His, I can almost name every one of his films. His last film was The Sacrifice,
mm-hmm.
which is...
I think I did see that one.
Start with his shortest films are like 3 hours long.
Right. No, I have no... I have to say I have no interest in seeing Stalker.
Stalker, maybe not. And by the way, the word stalker has nothing to do with stalking.
Mm-hmm.
It means a guide. A stalker, and that's based on the novel Roadside Picnic by Boris and Arkady Strugatsky.
And I have probably the only person in the United States who can't stand the... Well, I'm just not a fan of theirs particularly.
Mm-hmm.
It might be the translations.
Bingo.
I mean, it's even worse with Stanislaw Lem.
Exactly.
I've had
Michael Kandel, who I haven't heard from in 10 years. I've got to get him back on the air.
Well, he was working from home. I think he was still working for the Modern Library Association, but his email's been bouncing, so I don't know where.
Yeah, same here.
So I don't know what's going on.
And you or I should have him do a reading. He's a wonderful reader.
I don't think he's been writing anything. As far as I know.
Yeah. Well, I want him on the air anyway, mm-hmm. because he once brought a Polish writer on the air and did the translating.
Oh.
It was wonderful. It was really great. I put the Polish writer slightly off mic and Michael directly off mic. And Michael, knowing the subject, he basically did the interview and gave the answers. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. It was really good.
Yeah, I was in touch with Michael within the last few years, at least 2 or 3 years, because he sent me a bunch of stories for something, I can't remember what, translation, maybe for the Year's Best.
Yeah.
It might have been 2 years ago, but since then I kind of lost touch
with him. I've been out of touch with him for at least 5 or 6 years. But at any rate, get him going. And I did an interview a mere month ago with Ken Liu, mm-hmm. about translations.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, was he fascinating on the subject.
Where does he live?
Boston.
Oh, okay.
Boston, yeah, Harvard. He translates stories from Mandarin into English.
Oh,
science fiction.
Oh, that's great.
Not fantasy stories.
Mm-hmm.
Mandarin science fiction, real. Contemporary. Contemporary,
mm-hmm.
modern stories. People his age, 30 years old.
Wow.
And some older and all that, where he can actually talk with the writer,
right.
and deal with idiomatic concepts.
That's crucial for good translations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to talk to him about the fact that, you know, last year this guy won the Triple Crown on the short story. He won the Nebula, the Hugo, and the World Fantasy Award for Best Short Story this year. On the Nebula ballot, he's nominated for 3 out of the 4 categories because he hasn't written a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't nominated he's nominated for everything else. Jesus. You know, and soon he's going to turn 30 years old. No, he's under 35.
Mm-hmm.
He's a young man, and he's a great writer. Anyway, and he's this translator. He's a lawyer. He's got adorable twins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, and a good reader, too, by the way. And so anyway, all that aside, we were talking about translation. And there was a new translation, by the way, of book Roadside Picnic that came out last June that a lot of people said turned the Strugatsky brothers from hack writers into great writers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, I haven't read the new translation. Mm-hmm. I was interested in reading the book because I loved the Tarkovsky film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you really, for certain Tarkovsky films, you have to be in the film forum in a certain state of mind that one cannot discuss on the radio as an advocacy format. But so I will maintain that Solaris is one of the great science fiction films. I love Solaris, the first one that Tarkovsky did. Then Soderbergh did his version, which isn't bad either.
I'm thinking of renting that one.
The Soderbergh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's totally different than the Tarkovsky film.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's from the same novel. But the novel, Stanislaw Lem's novel, is so rich that there are many different ways one can interpret it and take it. And Lem hated both movies. He just did not want to see, I think, real, you know, manifestations, physical manifestations.
Well, I'm sure he had his own idea of what it should look like.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you could just read his mind and translate it directly, I mean, it's not going to be the same than what he imagined.
And that's always going
to be. Or usually that happens with movies.
Yeah, and it's almost always going to be the case is that, you know, the writer has to take the check and say, you know,
Take the money and run. Do not pass go. Do not get stuck in Hollywood.
I spoke to one writer and simply said, so what did you think of the movie, blah, 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 big budget movie based on this person's work? And he said, I have a new swimming pool.
That's the attitude, yeah.
That's the right attitude. That really is. It's how you have to go with it. You have new books out.
Mm-hmm. One a ghost story anthology, in fact.
Yeah, and that's one I haven't gotten yet.
That one's all reprints.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's called Hauntings, and it's...
an appropriate title.
Yes. Well, believe me, it was tough because about three books of ghost stories came out at the same within 2 years, and it was hard to get a different title. So the idea, though, was to use ghost stories in maybe the last 20 years or so, and I was looking for not only ghosts but hauntings in general. I mean, hauntings, including houses and all different kinds of hauntings. And the problem or the challenge of a reprint anthology is finding stories that haven't been overused.
Right.
By, you know, that the stories that are most, best known and maybe have won awards and maybe by famous people, the ones that have been reprinted over and over again. So it's really kind of difficult and it's a real challenge to find stories that the writer might not remember, oh, yeah, that's a ghost story? Sure, yeah, that's a ghost story. Please let me, can I see it? Can I reread it?
Right.
So that's the challenge.
But these are all contemporary. These aren't all Sheridan Le Fanu.
No, they're all contemporary. Yeah. I mean, in the last 25 years. I can't remember the oldest story I've got in the book. If you find the table of contents, maybe you can remind me.
Well, that's actually what I'm trying to do right
yes,
now.
Yes, he was supposed to get a copy of the book, and he didn't.
Yeah, and I'm and all.
It occurred to me to bring my own copy.
And
but
my little electronic friend here is not being
recalcitrant.
Yeah.
But I've got two stories called Hunger, one by Peter Straub and one by Del Bailey. Hunger, an appreciation, and Hunger, a confession. I think Peter's is called Hunger and Appreciation. But anyway, Dale's is called Hunger, a Confession. And I think I had them bookend the book.
Oh, that's clever.
I think I did it that way. I mean, only not because of the titles, but because the stories felt right that way.
Yeah. This is going to happen.
Now it's working?
Well, it's booting up.
Oh, okay.
Which means it's going to take about 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I have a Kelly Link story that came out recently, last year. I was able to have rights to that, called Two Houses. That's science fiction. Yeah, she read it. She's read parts of it. I heard her read the whole thing at Florida 2 years ago.
Okay.
And so that's in there. I'm not going to remember what. Joyce Carol Oates' Hauntings. Haunts? Oh, I don't remember the title. Do you think? I was like, oh, no.
We'll have it in a couple of minutes.
Okay, so. I'm trying to think who else is in there and what else is in there. Now I'm working on like three other books, so it's hard to remember. What was that? I finished that one 2 years ago or a year and a half ago.
How many anthologies a year do you put out?
It totally varies. I only have...
You've had years with five books.
Yes. That was because one book was delayed by a year. You know, so that happens too. I mean,
yeah.
I try to stagger when books are due.
Yeah.
That's really important or you're totally in trouble.
And in the past, we've also talked about just what is it that... what does it take to put out the best of the year anthology? Tell the story again.
Which one? What?
No. Just what it takes, because to me, it's a staggering
idea. Well, I'm reading it all year round. I mean, if I counted what I'm probably paying the publisher to do it when it comes down to man hours.
Yeah, I was.
So that's why I'm especially. I mean, I'm hoping, and I'm planning for the best horror number 5 to come out this year. I mean, it was supposed to come out in June, but with the Nightshade in flux, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
Suffice it to say that the publisher is in transition from one company to another. Is that correct?
Their properties are, maybe.
The properties of the company.
The assets.
That's it, right, yeah.
I mean, it's not...
Yeah.
Nothing's definite at this point.
I haven't been following it very
right,
carefully.
Right, right.
But just the fallout.
Right. But anyway, the year's best has always taken more time than anything else because I'm trying to read everything, every kind of short story available.
You can't begin to quantify, can you? Just how...
Yes, I can. I mean, from the my rec list, which maybe I forget how many. I mean, I now do honorable. I only do like 50. I can't remember. I think 50 honorable mentions are actually in the print book, and I have like the rest of them. The recommended list I post online, and there are hundreds of stories on that, and that so multiply that by 10 because the ones I recommend are a fraction of what I read.
Yeah,
and I miss things all the time. I mean, I miss things online. It's sometimes I miss literary journals. I can't keep track of everything. It's really very difficult to try to read or skim everything.
Hauntings, right? Because
Hauntings, the current one, yeah.
Yeah, because I start typing in...
And put my name. I mean, you do
Hauntings.
Yeah,
well, that's what I did, but, no sooner do I do that than the search engine says Haunted Legends. It's like, that's a different book.
No, just it'll come up next.
Tachyon.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are. And it's very interesting how some people... here, you know how to use one of these, don't you?
What is it?
This is a tablet. This is a Nexus tablet.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
I know.
Make it larger
yes.
or smaller.
Oh, yeah. It's just okay. It's like my Kindle. I have a Kindle.
I've got
Pat Cat. Oh, and Hunger is not the first story. See, I made it. I was wrong. I have Pat Cadigan in there. E. Michael Lewis, who's a totally pretty new writer. Lucia Shepard's Delta Sly Honey. David Morrell, Caitlin Kiernan, Joyce Carol Oates, Haunted. Yeah. Elizabeth Hand has one of the lighter weight stories, probably the only lightweight story in it. Neil Gaiman's Closing Time, F. Paul Wilson, Jonathan Carroll, Terry Dowling, Paul Walther, Simon Kurt Unsworth, Connie Willis has a ghost. That has might have been the earliest story, and that was from, I think, 1985 or maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe earlier. I'd have to look at the copyright page.
One.
Stephen Gallagher, Michael Marshall Smith, Richard Bowes, James P. Blaylock, Jeffrey Ford, Gemma Files, Kelly Link, Adam L. G. Neville, and Peter Straub.
That's quite a list.
Yeah.
And, the most...
And it was fun. I mean, I love it. I mean, what I do is, I'll go after the writers who I think might have, who I remember, some of them are stories I've published in various places.
Right.
Either in an anthology or some of them, at least one of them I took in the best of the year and took it again for this.
Yeah.
So some of the stories I have a handful that were really memorable that I love and I want to use. And then what I'll do is I think I might have done an open call for people. I'm not sure. I did that with at least one of my, definitely with my cat anthology, Tales of Wonder and Imagination. I definitely had an open call for cat stories.
Didn't you have two cat anthologies?
My first one was Twist of the Tail, which was horror, right. Which was small compared to Tales of Wonder and Imagination, which was like 240,000 words.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think it was that big. It was pretty big. Maybe not that big, but pretty large. I mean, twice the size of Twist of the Tail, at least. And that one I put out an open call for people to suggest stories, and I was surprised at how few people did in the scheme of things. People were always complaining, my anthologies aren't open. And then I put an open call. I mean, even though it's a reprint anthology, you know, come on, guys, you know, let me know. Tell me. Talk to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I got a Susanna Clarke story that I'd never heard of, that had not been published anyplace but like a newspaper once. So, and I got an uncollected Stephen King story. Mm-hmm. Probably someone recommended it to me. So people did recommend a few. I don't remember if I put out an open call for the ghost stories, but I did go to a lot of the writers whose work I know and ask them, do you have any ghost stories or haunted house stories or that I may not be aware of? And you really have to push, because people sometimes, they often forget.
Yeah.
Or they don't think, oh, no, I don't. I mean, I remember with the cat thing, I contacted Nicholas Royal and I said, do you have a cat story? And he said, no. And I said, wait a minute. I remember. Are you sure? Because didn't I reprint Mabeau? I mean, a story of yours in my best year's best fantasy and horror that was about jaguar people. And he said, yeah. I said, duh. Well, you know, that's related, honey. So yeah. You have to prod writers. They don't remember. They don't know what they have.
You
written.
Know things about writers more than the writers themselves.
Sometimes.
No. Case in point. One of your best of the year anthologies, where I've never discussed this with you because it gets to a personal level.
Well, it may not be something. It might have been one of my co-editors. Anyway, whatever you want to talk about.
I was going to talk about that 2 years ago. That one particular writer got three stories in an honorable mention,
mm-hmm.
And this particular writer told me that she wasn't even aware of the fact that she wrote horror stories. She never thought of those stories as horror and all that. And here they were, three honorable mentions in your book, which was, by the way, a major thrill.
Oh, okay.
For Barbara. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and you know, I have, and, a broad, and you're, I have a broad view of what horror is. And I'm willing to, to give someone an honorable mention, it's not like, It's, I can be generous, you know.
That's right.
If I consider
because
something,
you're not paying for it,
right? And then, and yeah, I mean, if it's dark enough and I really like the story, I'll give it an honorable mention, or I'll put it on my recommended list.
Yeah, but it also,
but it means I do think it's dark enough to consider horror.
And
I may not consider it dark enough to take it for my year's best, even if I absolutely love it. But it does. But it means I want to acknowledge it.
Yeah, and I pointed out that one of the stories that was in there is the. There's a reveal that the person telling it is, well, not of this world, not a ghost.
Mm-hmm. What story are you talking about?
Waiting for Jakey. That was published
That sounds very familiar. I don't remember. Called Waiting for Jakey?
Yeah.
This is a story I published?
No. This is a story you gave an honorable mention to.
Oh, okay, okay.
By Barbara Krasnoff.
Right.
And it's her best story. I'm in trouble. I just love that story, but it's also it's my favorite because it involves the history of my family. But anyway, there is a reveal in there that we know that time is out of joint and all that. What we don't realize is that at least one of the characters is totally out of time,
mm-hmm.
and it's a dark. You don't realize until the impact of the story hits you at the end just how dark it actually is. But in writing it, the author never thought of it as a horror story.
Right. Well, I mean, even...
She saw the darkness as a Holocaust story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, even places like Analog publishes occasional horror.
Yeah.
I had one of a story a few years ago. I had a story from Analog on my short list. I don't remember which story it was, but it means that I considered it horror, and I was considering it. It was on my short list too, for the end, so that I would read when I start eliminating. So it was on my short list for a while. I don't remember who the author was or anything, but, you know, they do, there is science fiction horror in there occasionally.
Yeah. But we got into this whole discussion just because I was mentioning to poor Dan Persons, who did, you know, as sort of his
Evil Dead
trial review, that he was going to review Evil Dead. And to me, it's like, yes, I know it's genre. No, it's not what I consider as a part of Hour of the Wolf. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong, because sometimes
have to think of your audience too, and you presume you have to have some idea of what your audience is. So
I'm the editor.
Yeah, so you have to. That's part of being the gatekeeper.
But
you can have a broad taste, and you can bring in more. You can be inclusive in certain ways, but you also have to be aware of who your market or who your readership or
and
who
but
your
here, but here,
listeners are.
But the irony is that this radio show is named after a horror movie.
Well, yeah. How did that happen? I mean, we don't need to get into
Margot Atler created
yeah,
the show.
Right, yeah.
The movie is a 1967 Ingmar Bergman film.
Yeah, I know.
And it struck her, and there is such a thing. I had a guest on by the name of Veronica Shanis, who is an expert.
Can I look something up on here?
Yeah, you have to hit this little tab on the side here.
Okay.
And it comes live.
Okay.
And then you see the penguins and you know.
And how do I type?
What do you want to do?
I'm not telling you. I want
to
do it.
You want to go to a website?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to Google something.
Yeah, everything on here is Google. This is a Google toy.
Okay.
So you just type in.
Oh, got it.
You
okay.
Want.
Okay. You keep on talking. Okay. It's okay.
Sorry, I'm going back to my little seat now. Okay. So it's what was I? I'd gotten past Hour of the Wolf, I think.
We're talking about horror.
Yeah, we were talking about horror, and I was saying the irony was...
You can talk about my other book.
Well, yes, Queen Victoria's Book of Spells.
Yeah.
Now, if there isn't a better, more intriguing title than that, I don't know what there is. Say that you want to use the browser, Chrome.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, unless it's a Wikipedia thing.
It's IMDb.
Oh, no, yeah, then you can actually use the app.
Okay, good.
And then you have to say once or always. Say always.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That way, whenever it comes
okay.
to an IMDb.
All right, anyway, it's Terry's title. I do not know where she got it from. Ah, I was wrong, but I was right. Andrei Konchalovsky. He was a Russian.
Ah.
Who made Runaway Train.
Okay.
So it was a Russian, not Tarkovsky.
Is that the name?
Konchalovsky.
Was the movie in Russian?
No. John Voight, Eric Roberts, and Rebecca De Mornay. Are in
it. Oh, okay. I see. Yes. No.
Okay. I'd had to check.
Yeah, the movies I were talking about are strictly Russian.
Right. Got it. Okay.
But
I knew a Russian made this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's, what's the name of that Russian director? He made a couple of really good Russian horror films.
The one who did the recent ones? Daybreak. I haven't seen them. I really want to see them. I have them on my Netflix.
I am not a vampire movie type person. Let me tell you, these are excellent.
Oh, you saw them. Okay.
Oh, yes, I saw mm-hmm. them. I thought they were... Mm-hmm. Quite. At least I loved the first one, and I enjoyed the second. And then he turned into a Hollywood director.
Oh, that's what happens to them, unfortunately.
And then he made the movie Wanted, and now he's doing a superhero movie.
Mm.
You know, and it's like, what a shame.
Yeah.
What a shame. You had this amazing original voice making a kind of cinema that I hadn't seen before that just totally drew me in, that is no question within the genre, but with fresh eyes from somebody from outside the genre
yeah.
doing something with it. And now he's making Hollywood movies. What a shame.
Yeah.
You know, it's... you know, the only reason that didn't happen to Tarkovsky, who had just emigrated to the U.S. and was about to start making movies, is the poor man died young.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, he
might. Would have been doing it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. Bergman was one of the only people who never really gave in to that kind of thing. He just, when he wanted to go somewhere else, he just directed opera. And he did a lot of opera at the Brooklyn Academy of Music and some Ibsen and that was his Americanization of, okay, I can't make a Bergman film right now. It's like, I don't have time for another 16-hour scenes from A Marriage or Fanny and Alexander or, you know, one of the masterpieces. Mm. So he did The Magic Flute.
Right.
Which is, by the way, a splendid, put that on your Netflix queue, Ingmar Bergman's The Magic Flute. Mm-hmm. Wonderful movie. If you can stand Mozart in Swedish, it's very strange.
Okay.
Tell us more about Queen Victoria.
Well, it was Terry's idea.
I'm sorry.
What?
It was Queen Victoria that reminded me of the story I was going to tell earlier, very briefly.
Okay.
I had on a writer who was in Queen Victoria's Book of Spells, mm-hmm. as a guest, a CUNY professor by the name of Professor Veronica Shanus. She was saying, why is the show called Hour of the Wolf? And I was saying, well, it's this mythological time that, you know, the ancient Romans believed in and the Swedes also. And she said, you mean Vargtimen? Excuse me? Vargtimen, it's that time of day, it's between night and dawn. It's, you know, especially mm-hmm. the Swedes, all the Nordics go for it, but it's called Vargtimen. And I said, how does that translate into English? And she said, I guess it's Hour of the Wolf. So that's how I found out a lot more about the title of my show.
Yes. Veronica has a wonderful story in Queen Victoria's. Did she read some of it or all of it?
She read all of it. I think she called you for permission before she did.
Oh, which she didn't have to do. Oh, I know. It was because it was audio or something.
She did. It was on this show, and she wanted to.
No, it's a wonderful story and very upsetting, very depressing about phosphorus. It's called Phosphorus, and it's about Fastjor and the young women who worked in factories and match factories in England.
Yeah.
And had Fossy Jaw from the phosphorus and the matches, and about unionizing. Veronica's from a union family. She's a union babe.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that, but boy, does that figure.
It comes out in a lot of her fiction.
Yeah.
In a wonderful way. But she's really good at the history, and you have to be careful when you do that. It's like, okay, you have all the history, you take half of it out. You know, you don't need, that's not part of the story.
Yeah, this is what you get for hiring a CUNY professor.
So anyway, the stories take place around the Victorian period and Edwardian period. There are an interesting variety of stories from, there are several stories that are either using real people, including Queen Victoria once in a while, although mm-hmm. we didn't want too many stories with Queen Victoria as a character. There are stories using characters from fiction. Mm-hmm. My mother just finished the book, and she loved it, which is high praise that she liked everything, because my mother does not like everything. Although she didn't get the last story in the book, Estella Saves the Village by Theodora Goss, has a lot of characters from different books and from the period, I think. My mother didn't get that at all, but she loved, which is good, because it means you know, she loved the story, but she didn't.
With not knowing the references,
So that's a good thing.
I have read any number of stories that Dora Goss has written where I did not know the source material. Shame on me. And I loved them.
Well, that's really important for a writer to do. I mean, because you don't want to have a story that only specialists can understand.
Yeah.
Or experts. You want to have a story that's engrossing. And, you know, the fact that there may be things that... there are other underlying things going on, or there are overlying things, like this is a character here, and that's a character, and that's a historical person. You don't want it to overwhelm the story, because the story will just get lost in it.
It's the problem that I had in maybe the first 5 years of this radio show, is that, you know, I started young, mm-hmm. and so I was being fannish. I was talking to mm-hmm. to the cognoscenti. Now, how many cognoscenti... really know this stuff in the United States? 5,000? How many in the listening area of New York? If we're lucky?
50.
100.
Yeah.
And all that. And there was a certain point when all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, it's okay to be the geek. And in those days, geek nerd wasn't a positive term mm-hmm. the way it is today. But what I have to do is I have to let the world see inside of the world of the geek mm-hmm. instead of being for the geek world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when everything changed. And that's when I also began to understand a little bit as a reader and a reviewer. I'm not a critic, but a reviewer mm-hmm. of fiction, of what it is that one has to do, how you have to speak to all and not be so self-referential or referential to...
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to who you're trying to reach in your fiction or in your show or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
What is your audience?
Yeah.
Do you want, you know, only the 100 most learned people in the United States to understand what your story is about, or do you want to reach a larger audience?
Well,
and it's, you know, and that really is something that writers have to decide for themselves.
And but some of them are very, very successful at being oblique. You know, at being impenetrable.
I guess.
You know, there are...
They're respected, perhaps. Are they actually read? Depends.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah. So what is overall the premise of... how would... When you were putting out your call for stories on...
Stories about...
Victoria.
Stories of the Victorian period. A gaslight fantasy. A gas lamp fantasy. Stories like Susanna Clarke's... Oh, I can never remember the title, which goes first.
Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
I always think about Norrell.
But
basically that kind of fantasy.
I had her on the show. I said Norrell 3 times. She corrected me 4 times.
You said Norrell?
I said Norrell.
Okay,
it's,
so Norrell.
Norrell.
Okay.
Mr. Norrell.
Yes, all
which,
right.
By the way, is coming out later this year.
As a movie, right? A TV
no,
series.
As a miniseries.
Yeah.
A BBC
That'll
miniseries.
That'll be great. That'll be fun. That could be wonderful.
I hope.
Yeah.
I love that book.
Yeah, but anyway, this is inspired by that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the book, that's Gaslight Lamp Fantasy.
Yeah.
And it takes place mostly, most of the stories are in the in England. Or in the United States. And basically, it has to take place in a place where there are gas lamps. I mean, that's the whole point. So
everybody who hears the word Victorian and therefore immediately says, steampunk!
I was just going to say, no, it's not steampunk. I mean, there are a few steampunk stories in it. And
that's almost
our publisher was happy to push that aspect because it's popular.
It sells.
Yeah, and that's fine. And there are some steampunk stories in it.
Yeah.
But that's not what it is. To me, steampunk is the technological. It's always technological.
Yeah.
It has to have a technological aspect. I mean, not everything in Queen Victoria's Book of Spells is technological. I mean, there's a lot that's not. That's pastoral.
Yeah, the word spells sort of like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Includes the non technology.
Yes.
we will continue talking here, but I think we have phone lines that work here. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But the on the air number is area code 212-650-5782. I thought we were supposed to get these, actually Verizon was going to be putting in phone lines for
Ooh.
Us. And I don't think it's actually happened yet.
So then what phone lines are they?
They are...
It'll be a surprise.
That number works, and there's a call coming in.
Okay.
And I almost guarantee you it's from somebody who lives within 10 blocks.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Think about it. You can come up with the answer. What CCNY professor do you know who calls every show?
I don't know.
Well, if I can remember how to put a call on the air. Yes, it's this. Let's see if it's him. Good morning, you're on the air. Oops, nope.
Not well, anymore.
Wasn't him. No, but this one. Hi there, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Yes. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Ellen.
Hi there.
Yes. Okay. So, Watt's CCNY
professor. I didn't know he was a CCNY professor.
I taught history of the American West for 20 years. Oh.
Oh, hello there.
Yes. Oh, well, that's okay. Now, you said some of your stories take place in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Any out west? Because you know there were gas lamps in certain cities on the frontier.
I'm trying to remember.
Uh-huh.
I would think St. Louis might have had some.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of stories from Queen Victoria.
Oh, Deadwood had gas lamps, you know. But anyway, no, that's interesting. I'm looking.
That depends on what they were serving in Deadwood. That.
I mean, phosphorus. The one Leanna Renee Heber story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking on the title. It's got. What is it called? Where is it? You have the book. Where's the book?
Oh, I didn't bring it with me.
I can't believe you.
Ellen, I'll take your word for it.
All right. Anyway, her story takes place in the United States and in England.
You wouldn't.
And I don't remember.
James, please. I've already had two nightmares even before your show finishes. Iron Man 8, please.
Not yet. Not for a few years.
Oy vey.
Yeah, it depends on Joss Whedon's contract.
It's 3, but please, I don't want to see 4, 5, 6.
You know what? Neither does Robert Downey.
Please. Listen, I'm shuddering to think that in 4 months I may have to go see, because I've been asked to review it for the WWA convention in Texas, this new Lone Ranger film with Johnny Depp with the bird on his head. Triple Oi. That's going to be terrible. But anyway.
No, actually, there's every reason to believe that it's going to be very good.
Or at least interesting.
You know, it's a Gore Verbinski film, and you have to look at it on that basis. Mm-hmm. And the reason Johnny Depp is in it is because it's a Gore Verbinski film, not
playing,
the other way around.
And I think he's playing Tonto.
That's correct. And he's playing Tonto as if he were an Indian of that particular tribe, and they wore those things on their heads.
Well,
guess what? It's real.
Well, you know, it's interesting because even in the Clayton Moore series and the radio and all that stuff, we were never told what tribe he was from, but that's another discussion.
Wait, there was a radio show?
Oh, there's Lone Ranger for many
years. Never mind.
Yes, I know. Max can tell you. Anyway, the other thing
Max
I
who?
Was going to mention to you, James, please. I've seen Battle in the Stars, and look, I know the Magnificent Seven was a ripoff, but please don't compare them.
Not a ripoff.
Well, you know what it was?
It's a remake.
It's a steal.
It's a remake.
Well, it's a remake.
Listen, Kurosawa took Westerns and made them into samurai films,
right.
And Sergio Leone took Kurosawa films and made them into Westerns.
Westerns.
Who's stealing from whom?
Well, listen. I will say this. I hope someday, because I don't believe that there is an English, because there are, I hope someday somebody redoes the Seven Samurai in English, because right now it's just, you know, subtitles. Let me get to ghost stories, because Ellen, you brought up an interesting subject. I don't know if you know this or not, Ellen, but you have been put on a list, a must reading list, for at least one small university in Canada.
Really?
I'll tell you how that happened. I won't mention his name, but a very dear friend of mine who's an expert on early silent horror films and ghost stories called me a few years ago and asked.
One second. Charged.
Thank you. I kept saying electricity. I know it's not electricity. Charged, yes. Thank you.
Anyway, he called me and he asked me for a
sorry, Leanne, if you're listening. Sorry, go on, Robert.
Yes, he called me and asked me for a recommended list of ghost stories, contemporary and past, and I gave him the usual. I told him La Fanu, and I told him Lafcadio Hearn's Japanese Tales.
Right.
And Rudyard Kipling did a marvelous collection called Tales from the Indian Hills, which has some great ones. The late Patrick Mendoza has a collection I want to recommend to you if you like good, memorable ghost stories. It's called From Midnight to Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Stories of the American Frontier from Ethnic Perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
All ghost stories. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned your ghost collection, The Dark, and some others, and he put them on his list, and now they are required reading for his college students.
Fantastic.
In Ottawa.
Fantastic. Wow. I'm happy. Thank you.
And, what could I say? And now I want to ask you, the two cat collections, are they still in print?
Twist of the Tail probably is not. Tales of Wonder and Imagination might be. I'm not sure.
Do you think that Twist of a Tail can be gotten through Amazon? I mean, it's available, right?
Twist of the Tail, I don't know. There might be used copies
around. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, you can never tell with used copies. You know, you can try Powell's or Amazon or wherever.
Yeah.
But you know what's a place that I recommend very much? I'm a big fan of a piece of software called Overdrive Media, which is freeware. And what you do is you go and you put in the local branch of your library, and you put in your library card number, and you can check out an ebook, and it will read it aloud to you, or you can read it to yourself.
Wow.
And it's free, and it's like checking out a book from the library, except that it's an ebook. And libraries are very likely to have out of print books edited by Ellen Datlow. So go get yourself this software. It's available on computer, tablet, phone, and whatever.
Yeah,
Out from the library.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if, I don't know if it wouldn't matter if Tales of Wonder and Imagination was on, I don't know if it was an e-book, but that wouldn't matter.
By the way, James, just some leftover business from last week. The other reader you had that memorable night in October with was Roz Cavaney.
That's right.
The one from England.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I
remembered that about 3 minutes after I was off the air.
Well, okay. Anyway, that was a memorable night for a lot of reasons. Deborah was wonderful, and Roz was wonderful. Anyway, the...
And that venue really wasn't bad.
This was
Ellen's asking. I've just got to tell her the story quickly. Ordover had
double
booked.
Yes. So where did you end up?
We ended up at this rehearsal space directly across, like kitty corner from the Public Theater. 440 Lafayette, and they have about 18 rehearsal spaces in two floors, and it's really good. This is a non-commercial because, yes, I do recommend it for people. You don't get pure soundproofing, and the thing that was so charming was that we were in a big room, but there was a tiny, small room next door to us where there were a whole bunch of little girls belting and singing out loud, and I have since then figured what it was is that they were auditioning Matilda.
Oh, right.
And so the idea that you have over here, Roz Cavaney reading and Deborah Grabian and all that, and in every so often somebody would hit a note, and I'm thinking, my God, this is like Smash for kids. And it really was. They were auditioning Matilda next door, and I thought that was just so cool. You know, it was like a Roald Dahl musical on hand.
That's interesting. And so, Ellen, let me get to some other of your many, many... book wonders. How is the various, are you and Terry planning any further?
This is Terry Windling, tell people.
Are you planning any further fairy tale rewrites or themes?
We would like to, but we haven't done anything about it yet. We want to do a new retold fairy tale anthology, but we just haven't
So you haven't done anything since Beastly Brides?
That wasn't fairy tales. We haven't done anything since Trolls Eye View. That was fairy tales.
I'm sorry?
That was for middle grade.
Yeah.
We would like to do more, another retold fairy tale anthology at some point, but I'm not sure when.
Well, I consider the Beastly Brides sort of retold.
No, actually, that's called the Mythic series, and
they're not fairy tales at all.
Mythic
series. Yeah, I still say of all of those, the best ones for me is Coyote Road.
I'm glad you liked it.
Well, Trickster
it's,
Tales.
It's one of my favorites, I have to say.
You know, Trickster Tales are, well, what can you do?
Yeah, and there are just so many aspects to the Coyote Loki type of trickster.
Yeah.
And that anthology, I wouldn't be surprised that you could do another. And by the way, Tom Hiddleston, whatever one thinks of the Avengers movies and all that, is a great actor.
Okay.
Is he the guy that played Loki?
Yes.
And in Thor?
Yes.
I just saw him in
the Avengers.
Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, I haven't seen Deep Blue Sea.
I didn't realize that's who he was.
Well, I just saw him in Henry IV and Henry V.
Oh.
And he is Hal. He's a very good very, very good Prince Hal.
Mm-hmm. By the way, James, run away.
I would rank him above Olivier, below Brannock.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, James, last point. Runaway Train, great film.
I'll have to watch it sometime.
Great film. Anyway, Ellen, keep up the good work. I don't know how you have time to sleep or eat or anything else, but as I say, you are now among the sought after in rural Ontario.
Terrific.
College.
Sought after in a good way.
Yes, I hope they buy all my books.
Well, listen. Well, I told them, actually. I gave them more than just your ghost titles, and I think a friend of his actually bought all of the Mythic series, both young and old, as well as Haunted Legends.
Okay, given our limited phone lines and another call coming in. Oh, too late. We already lost it. Okay, take care, though.
Bye-bye.
Telephone number here at WBAI this week is area code 212-650-5782.
Us before they change the phone number.
We have had, since Hurricane Sandy, when they knocked out all the phone lines at 120 Wall Street, and we were getting people to call in through Skype and Google Voice and any number of different means, we have had a minimum of 5 or 6 phone lines, and this one is not our permanent line. And we're going to start, we haven't had a fundraising drive in a week, so we're going to be starting a new one in about 2 weeks.
Right.
And the Transmitter Fund emergency drive is over. We made it.
Good.
Jesus. But now there's this other thing just called the survival of WBAI. Mm. And if we should somehow miraculously manage to survive, there will be the next step, which is buying a building. That's the next step in the evolution of WBAI, is going back to the days when we used to own a building.
That'd be great.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the plan, and I think it's a great plan.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard that, I was all ready to, lash out against management, and this management said, no, we're going to buy a building, and we can sublease a theater, and then we can use that theater for events. I'm going, yes, that's wonderful. So, couldn't curse them out as much as I wanted to. The phone line here is weird, so if I don't get you when you're calling, please be patient and call back. But I wanted to ask a question I've been meaning to ask you on the air for the longest time. And I wonder if you and Terry aren't somewhat responsible for a major trend in popular culture today, the retold fairy tale. You have Once Upon a Time on ABC, which is actually getting a spinoff into an Alice in Wonderland. Now, that's an obvious one because people have to remember that ABC is owned by Disney.
Right.
And so they're just licensing and using their own characters. When you see Pinocchio, it's Disney. When you see, they're not using the Charles Perrault characters. They're using the Disney characters. And then Alice in Wonderland, they did an Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. But then on another channel, you've got Grimm. Mm-hmm. After the Grimm brothers. And these are just, 3 current TV series, and there's more. And then there are this, Snow White and the Huntsman.
I mean, they've been in the past. I mean, they were going on in the last 10 years. I mean, it was the Tenth Kingdom did use fairy tale tropes.
It used tropes, and also, but it didn't use
and
the
also,
actual characters.
No, but how about the
the Tenth Kingdom.
It was one with Sigourney Weaver, Snow White. She played the Wicked Queen. It was a series. It was a TV series.
Yes.
So I mean, there have been periodically. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think that our 6 adult fairy tale anthologies helped jumpstart a trend that had started with Angela Carter and Tanith Lee.
No, but they didn't quite reach out, I think, in the same way. I think people took a look at your books and the popularity because
I agree, but I don't think that's where the TV movie stuff came from.
Oh, I do.
I don't.
I think it's
out there. No, what happened is that everybody started doing retold fairy tales. In literature, okay? Now, eventually, because it's all over the place, then yes, media started noticing 10 years later that this was popular in literature.
But don't you think that a lot of that started with the anthologies that you and Terry were doing?
The literary renaissance of it, yes.
Yes. But, well, okay, but the literary, you know, once upon a time, there was a regular guest on this program who was on the show at least once every 2 months.
Cool.
And he would, I'll tell you okay. off the air. And he would read stories, and the story that he would read, lo and behold, by total coincidence, would be mm-hmm. optioned for a movie. They never made one of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
They just optioned the movies.
Wow.
They heard it on this mm-hmm. very radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, and this is before we were on the internet,
mm-hmm.
so somebody actually heard it, and if that had become a series, if that person's work had developed a trope, it could be, you know, it could be said
mm-hmm.
that that came indirectly from this one writer's work that happened to be read on the radio, that a producer happened to hear and said, hey, that's a good idea. We'll do that. So for obvious reasons, I don't want to say who it is because...
Mm-hmm, right. I mean, I have people who... There are Hollywood people who approach me every few years for this and that, you know, for ideas, for stories. I mean, from the year's best.
Mm-hmm.
I had a producer read the year's best. Best horror of the year, number one or two, I don't know, and was interested suddenly. It's like, oh, do you recommend any of the stories? I love these stories. Can I contact these authors? You know, so, I mean, they're always looking for new material, whether it's on radio or just reading.
Some well, that's
of them,
fine.
Some of them even read.
Well, yes, but the funny thing is that many of them call agents who specialize in reading.
Mm-hmm.
There are agents who very specifically cover turning genre books into cinema. And the funny thing is, in order to make a living at that, in order to get Hollywood to believe they're real, they all live in New York.
Mm-hmm.
They work in New York.
I read for 20th Century Fox in the mid-70s.
Cool. I didn't
no,
know
No, it was
that.
Really boring. I
yeah.
mean, you know, I did... For
yeah, but I'm talking about...
I mean, it was cool, but it didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like... They have, I've done this over time. I've read for agents. I've read for movie people.
Well, I'm talking about, I know an agent who sold 20 major works of major writers, all of whom you know.
Right.
Well,
there are agents who are movie people. I mean, that's what they do.
No, but this is a literary agent
mm-hmm.
who just specializes in selling to Hollywood. And in order to sell to Hollywood, Hollywood wanted to be sure that he was in New York
mm-hmm.
because New York is the center of things literary in their mind. And their minds, well, don't go beyond elevator pitches.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, I mean, here you're talking about something that you have in a best of the year, horror best of the year, fantasy, what have you, whereas your themed anthologies, I think, can cause somebody to say, ooh, there are a lot of stories in this kind of a theme, enough so that one could do
someone
a
tried to do that. Someone who is in Hollywood, who writes for Hollywood, and he sometimes produces for Hollywood now, he tried to sell one of my anthologies. He was in one of the anthologies, and he tried to sell that as a project, and he tried that for a couple of years. He even made a movie of his story, which was quite effective, the short film, to try to sell the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
It never went anywhere. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So,
that...
yeah, I mean... It does happen occasionally, but it happened.
But here we're talking about something mm-hmm. that has become a very active trope.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that by the end of 2013, we will have four TV series and I don't know how many more movies. There have been how many Snow White movies in the last 5 years? Three?
I just know of two, but yeah, probably more.
There, you know, what are the odds on that? And all of them being, you know, particular dark, I'm not going to say, well, yeah, trying to appeal to the Twilight audience. But never.
Well, then maybe that's where it comes from, the Twilight audience.
No, these were, no, I think it's almost the other way around. Mm-hmm. I think that Stephanie Meyer's fans came in on the wave of a lot of the work that other people, including yourself, have done.
I disagree.
Okay. You know, she just happened to hit something at the right time in the right way.
I think it's vampires.
Well, that's that whole other thing, yeah. And Margot Adler, by the way, has sold her essay on vampire fiction to Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be coming out in June.
As an Amazon book, a Kindle
book? As a Kindle. Mm-hmm.
As a
Kindle single, and it's complicated. I forget exactly what's going on, but there's like a multi-tiered thing that she's doing mm-hmm. with Amazon. But the main part of it, which is her dissertation practically on what modern vampirism is, and by the way, if people want to see her list of, mm-hmm. at this point, over 300 vampire novels that she's read in the last 4 years,
mm-hmm.
you go to npr.org.
Mm-hmm. Anthologies too, I hope?
No. I don't think so. I think these are all novels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes she has just like one-line reviews,
mm-hmm.
like softcore porn, loved it, you know, or, you know, real trash, great time. And she has her favorite, and she has many reviews, mm-hmm. which for this particular Amazon single will be, she's fleshed them out more. But,
right.
And I've actually broadcast her speech on how different vampire things break out,
mm-hmm.
and all that. And I want to have her do it again. I want to do a vampire evening at New York Review of Science Fiction, which, by the way, I need to promote. The next, because you mentioned a name, one that you just had, Liana Renee Heber,
mm-hmm.
who is a wonderful performer.
Yes.
She's an actress, and she has...
She really does.
Yeah, she really does do it. It's a full performance, and
mm-hmm.
she's like Mary Robinette Kowal in that way, that you're getting a performance, you're getting more than a reading.
Mm-hmm.
Evie Manieri, who has the first of a trilogy from Tor Books coming out this very month.
Mm-hmm.
So they will be on the 7th. May 7th.
Oh, I need to mention, can I mention something else that's coming out of mine?
Okay, let me just give the May 7th for more information. Take a look at my Facebook group, New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, or follow me on Twitter, or go to ourwolf.com now.
I've almost forgot. I edited an anthology called Telling Tales, the Clarion West 30th Anniversary Anthology.
Ooh.
That'll be coming out in around early July.
I've from, the door open.
From
I
Hydra.
From
Hydra House Books. And basically, it's award winning and other and acclaimed writers from Clarion West Workshop. And each writer has one of their former teachers writing an afterword about their story about them.
Oh, how
the
great.
Only person who did both, Andy Duncan, is both in the book as a student,
uh-huh.
and wrote the afterword for one of the other authors.
Well,
I can't remember who he wrote for.
That happened to a few people, that they were students who graduated and became mentors.
Well, yeah, but not in Clarion West. I mean, not that many.
Hmm.
I mean, not the ones in the book, let's put it that
way. Okay.
And Vonda McIntyre did a preface about the history of Clarion West a little bit, and I have a little intro.
We should get Margot. Few people realize I got this show because of Clarion West.
Okay.
Well, no, lots of people realize it because I tell
mm-hmm.
the story all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Margot Adler created Hour of the Wolf. She in 1972. In 1974, she went to Clarion West, which I think was the first or second. I'm not sure which.
Well, it only went on for a couple of years, and then it stopped for a while, and it only officially started like 10 years later.
Yeah, but she mm-hmm. went to one of the early ones.
Right.
And I was accepted to Clarion West as well, but
mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford to go.
Uh-huh.
So I had two choices. One was that I could get. There were people who were willing to pay for me to go to Clarion West, but mm-hmm. I thought I was a lousy writer, and I don't know why I was accepted. Mm-hmm. Or I could take over Margot Adler's radio program, Hour mm-hmm. of the Wolf. Mm-hmm. Well, guess which choice I took. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing that annoys me about it is, Margot, you ought to be writing fiction. You're a Clarion West graduate. Yeah. That's all. So so I got this radio show thanks to one of the first mm-hmm. Clarion Wests.
Right. So anyway, that book's going to be a fundraiser for Clarion West.
Yeah, and they need it. Both Clarions. How many? We have three now? There's Clarion.
Two. Okay. Well, Clarion South, it was going on for 3 years. Well, 2 years in a row, I think, and then it skipped a year, then another year. And you've only had 3 or 4 years before their space was... they lost their space, and they haven't been able to do it since. So
yeah.
I don't know if they'll start it up again.
Yeah.
But it was in Australia. It was in Brisbane.
Yeah. Well, each of the Clarions have had a history of having to go away and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
So one can only hope because... Yeah. And there are some other writing workshops that are worthwhile.
Yeah. I'll be teaching Clarion West again this year.
Cool. Cool. So
there's always... And they just got a $10,000 NEA grant. We all found out today, which is fantastic.
That's really good.
Yeah.
So that's for the administration of Clarion itself, as opposed to sending people.
I'm not actually sure what it's for, the Clarion West, the grant. I think it's to help. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's specified in the grant.
It's not, for example, to help people attend it.
Okay? I don't think so. They have a few scholarships for that.
Yeah. Yeah, there are actual scholarships.
Yeah, I don't believe it's for that. I may be wrong, but I don't think it's for that.
Yeah, yeah. But at any rate, it's been too long since I have done, oh my God, since I've done a program about workshops. Our show ends in 90 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, only one problem.
What?
Nobody's here.
So then we can keep going.
Who
is the person who comes in?
Usually it's this fellow named Lister, who you've met, with dreadlocks and charming.
Does he know he's supposed to just come in?
Yeah. Oh, he... Yes. Yeah. I mean, when...
Are there any other questions? Maybe someone's on the phone. No? Any
I'm
other
not,
quick
not,
call?
Not yet.
You have a few minutes before the other guy shows up.
But we still have to, whether we go on or not, we need to plug our own various events and things.
Okay, KGB next month.
Next one, yes. And, oh, it's...
Kit Reed and Donna Rabuzzi.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, I feel so damn guilty. I have got to get Daniel Rabuzzi on the show. I've never had him on this show. The Choir Boats... Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful book. Do you know where he works? You know his work address is?
No.
I shouldn't tell, you know, like somebody. 120 Wall Street.
Oh, okay.
Right above WBAI, the former WBAI. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, he's still in that building.
Oh.
And
you could have knocked on the door.
Yeah, really. And his wife is this amazing craftswoman.
Mm-hmm.
She does woodwork, and we're mm-hmm. talking about some of the most superb work you've ever seen. And he is just this really nice guy.
I've met him.
And a
nice.
Wonderful writer. You've mm-hmm. published short stories of his.
No,
you haven't?
No.
Well, somebody I know did. At any rate, so Daniel Rabuzzi and Kit Reed, who recently read for us, and she is just one of the perennial greats. Oh, come on in, Lister. How are you, Lister?
Why would I want to do that? Is this going to be another episode of Boned Again at 3 o'clock?
Yes, I think it is.
I got plenty of punk music, and that will be...
Well, okay, so what...
I'm going to wake them up in the other studio.
So we're going... Yeah, there you go. So we're going to go on for like another 5 minutes or so.
Please do.
And then
Okay. No, I don't know about that.
Give us like 10, 15 minutes, okay?
Well,
and
whatever.
Then,
so he's not coming?
I got work to do.
Well...
I'm not here to do radio.
All right.
The voice of Max Schmid, ladies and gentlemen.
I
don't know if he's coming or not, but his show started several minutes ago.
Oh, dear. Oh, well.
Okay. Or at least several seconds ago. So and we've already lost an important opportunity because the podcast, you see, cuts off at 3.
Oh.
No matter what. It doesn't know.
That's
from...
okay. Well, let me recommend Kit Reed's story that I just read. About the feral Girl Scouts. I can't remember the title. It's in I think I just read it in FNSF, but I can't swear to it.
Bring the mic down.
Oh, sorry. Oh, okay. Anyway, it's...
No, you don't have to go up to it. You
I can bring it down with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
How? Well, okay,
like
there
that.
It is. Oh, there it is. Okay.
There you go.
Unfortunately, I can't remember the title, but it's well, it's a new Kit Reed story came out a few couple of months ago, maybe, in FNSF.
Yeah, I mean, if people read...
And it's the scout, the missing girl, the missing scout troop of number, blah, blah, blah. And it's a horror story.
Hmm.
It's good.
Name two stories by Kit Reed that aren't good. Oop, trick question. There aren't any. I love her stuff. And, you know, for a person, by the way, who's not 25 years old, she is so on top. She could take, you know, any of the geek technology that I've got and just spin circles with it. She is so but the thing is, and see into it with an insight the likes of Pat Cadigan,
mm-hmm.
you know, who, I mean, Pat Cadigan, Jesus, Pat Cadigan wrote this novel, Here Comes Lister, called Tea from an Empty Cup,
mm-hmm.
which today would be like, yeah, so what? People actually selling virtual stuff on the internet? Only problem is that she wrote this about 5 years before people were doing anything, any gaming or anything like that with the internet. And she was there. She was right on top of it.
Yeah.
Amazing. And Kit Reed is even more amazing in her foresight and stuff. And now I haven't heard Daniel read. I assume he'll be good. But Kit is a great reader.
Yeah, she is. I told her you should read that story. She said, it's too long. I said, read it anyway. Read part of it.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Maybe I think she will.
Good.
Maybe.
Good. So that will be. He's standing out there for your show started.
Come on
for,
in.
Your show
We're just filling in the time for you.
I mean, I locked you out so you couldn't come in. I actually opened the door for you. I was wondering where you were. Like, you know, when Rick was here 2 weeks ago, he came in at about 2:05
mm-hmm.
and sat there. Not getting his show together, just listening to Rick Reed from his new fairy tale collection. Well, that was a great reading, wasn't it? And then you did the same with Daniel Jose Older.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it really was. I was very pleased. And, you know, he's a great audience. And Rick just takes a look at you and, well, that's another story. But anyway, the at any rate, the next KGB reading is whenever the third...
I think it's May 15th, but I can't swear to it.
It sounds right. The Ides of May. Mm-hmm. It's the third Wednesday of every month.
Come rain or come shine.
Come rain or
come
shine.
Come winter, come summer. We don't care.
You know, it annoys the hell out of me because doing this show Wednesday night... To me, this is Wednesday night, right? So last week I actually finally made it to another KGB and found out at 6:30, and how could I not attend with Elia Don Johnson and Rick Bowes reading? At 6:30 p.m. I found out I was on. We were supposed to be down for. Did you know that you were supposed to be on last week? No. We were all told. That from Monday through Thursday, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., we'd be off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is the matter, we were off the air for 3 minutes.
Oops.
Whoops. So I found out at 6:30 p.m.
Dead air.
And really, not dead air. Max.
No, but to him. Oh, what happened?
Oh, Max. Max happened.
What did Max do?
What didn't Max do? Max did punk music. Max did Golden Age Radio. He did Gene Shepherd. He did he did Max Radio, which is great radio, I must say. But Lister should have been doing Burn Baby Burn Clappers, which started 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Can't everybody listening tell? It's not easy getting up here, is it? He comes from the island.
Oh.
And I don't mean Jamaica.
Where in Long Island? Where do you live?
On the island of Long Island in Brooklyn.
Oh, you're in Brooklyn. That hardly counts. I'm in Brooklyn, too. I thought you were like in... well, that's because he also does a show on WUSB.
Oh.
So I think of Stony Brook. Say what?
I'm in Stony Brook on weekend. But it's
so that's Long Island. That's Long Island.
No, that's seriously Long Island.
Yeah.
Stony Brook, yeah. Anyway, so the next time people can come and see Ellen, introduce people in person, and go to the KGB Fantastic Fiction Reading Series, since I had Matt last week and you this. Maybe I should get Jen Brissett. That way we'll have the whole,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she was on the air not long ago. I'd like to get her back on. She's a good writer. Did you know that?
No.
And she's not yet, to my knowledge, published a story.
Mm-hmm.
But she came on the air and she read a story that blew me away.
Wow.
She's good.
She's not submitting them or not?
I don't know. I don't know what's behind it. I had her and this fellow Sam Miller, who was doing a queer reading series, and she's doing a people of color reading series. And
where?
Hers? It's a traveling...
Oh, and where is his?
Blue Stockings.
Oh.
Blue Stockings, a place where I won't generally record at all. I have enough trouble at yours, mm-hmm. at KGB, because we always get the clog hoppers.
Yes.
You get, I mean, in the middle of Rick's story last week, it was, you know, first Terrence Taylor's phone goes off, and he didn't know how to turn it off because he had a lens on it.
Uh-huh.
Then the sirens were on the street. Not, you know, we're not talking Homeric sirens. We're talking police sirens. Very different. And then we start getting the clodhoppers.
I didn't hear that upstairs at all.
Well, maybe it was a ghost in my ear. I don't know. All I know is that every step of the way, I'm just thinking my recording is for bleep.
Mm-hmm.
My, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
Sigh. And by the way, a special thanks... every month to Gordon Linsner, because I can't be at the KGB readings on Wednesday nights and do this show. He's been recording them all, and we both owe him a great debt of gratitude, so that these things somehow will eventually be archived and put out there, or, you know, something, but at least we know that the recordings exist. Speaking of which, there is a little movie, a 4.5-minute movie, about my old recordings and how Max Schmidt and others have restored them, made by Cesar Bustamante, who also did a little film on Terrence Taylor and maybe doing something about KGB. And we're going to use that for the premium for the next thon. My premium for the next thon will be... recordings of people that have been restored, and will include Frank Herbert, Clifford D. Simak, and Ray Bradbury among my guests.
Wow.
Oh, and Octavia Butler, just to name four.
Right.
You know, after that, it gets good. So,
we need to let him go.
Okay. Yeah, are you ready? Always. Okay, should I play my outro, or do you just want to start?
No.
I got to play the outro. Yeah, he likes Steel Ice Band. Okay. So, Ellen Datlow, D-A-T-L-O-W. Go to ellendatlow.com.
No, actually, it's datlow.com.
That's right. It's Datlow, D-A-T-L-O-W.com. And that will be the portal to all things Ellen Datlow.
A little outdated, but still.
Yeah. Oh, nowhere near as outdated as ourwolf.com. Thank you all for listening. I will be back next week on May 1st. May 1st, that will be my, 1967. From 1967 to now, how many years? Not to 2013, 1967. 43? 1967 to 1970 would be 3 years, then 30 years to 2000.
46 years.
Next Wednesday will be my 46th anniversary of working at WBAI. Weep for me. I already have a shrink, So you don't have to deal with that part of it. Just weep for me. And I will be back next week to weep at you. Good morning. Stay tuned.